This is the Skies Blue podcast.
Welcome to the Sky is Not Quite Rose-Tinted podcast. Well, we've not been with you in 2023, I don't think, so we've got a fair bit to talk about. We'll be looking back at West Brom, Scunthorpe, well, every other day postponement match, Aldringham, Barnet, Boreham Ward, player changes galore, new striker. Well, not at the time of recording. And what we've got coming up and coming fixtures and what the hopes and aspirations are for the rest of the season. So it's me, Phil Tooley, Paul Fisher, Daryl Carpenter and Stuart Basson on board. And yeah, let's start in the here and now before we do a little bit of history, shall we? Stuart Basson, no goals last two games, chances to galore. Is it just about one position in the team?
No, not entirely. You know, I mean, I know what you're alluding to. And if you have a player in that position, you want him to be able to stick the ball in the net, you know, on a number of occasions. But others, you know, you look at the attacking midfielders, do they score enough at the moment? You know, so it's not just one person, is it? You know, it was never just one person under Cookie when we had Owen Doyle. You know, people like Roberts and Klukas and that, you know, Shea used to come and weigh in with the goals. And that isn't happening at the moment either. We've got players in our team who can give you a 9 out of 10 and be really exciting to watch. But when you're not getting 9 out of 10, sometimes you're getting sort of 5.5 and 6, you know. And that's the problem at the moment, I think. I think it's slightly unfair to heap it all on the shoulders of one player in one position. But nevertheless, you know, that player in that position needs to just get his backside in the way of it and bum it into the net or something now and then just to get the pressure off, doesn't he, really? So it's not just all about him, no.
No, it isn't. But of course, Stuart, people will see the yard chance at Barnet and the yard, 2 yard chance at Boreham Wood, and understandably be frustrated in the same week that Kabongo Shimanga moved.
That's the unfortunate kind of appearance of it, isn't it? I mean, Kabongo Shimanga was always going to move, and he was always going to move in a transfer window, and it was always going to be at the very end of a transfer window, wasn't it? Because a buying club will leave it as long as they possibly can to try and get the best deal out of the player and out of the selling club. So he was always going to go that weekend. I suppose on that token, you say, well, why weren't we prepared for it? Well, perhaps we were talking to people, but we couldn't get a deal over the line. You can't get a deal over the line until the other guy's gone. Otherwise, you're buying somebody spending, you know, a substantial amount of money, perhaps in wages and transfer fees, and then saying, you know, we might go and buy, I don't know, Rivellino, to take a non kind of leading name off the top of, you know, we might go out and buy Rivellino, and we might say to him, well, look, Shimanga's going, so as soon as he goes, you'll be in the team. And then the Shimanga move breaks down and you've got both of them. What do? You can't get one, unfortunately, at our level until you've got rid of the other. We're not Chelsea, you know. We can't have 250 people sat in the north stand instead of the away fans waiting to strap their boots on, you know. So it's got to work like that. But yeah,
to be honest, I didn't realise Rivellino was available.
I'm not even sure if he's still alive, but it's just a name out of my, well, you know, when I began watching football that I didn't want to say any of the rumoured names that we've had knocking about, just in case anybody thinks, aha, we're buying him, you know.
Absolutely. But Daryl, you're close to a lot of the people involved at the club. It's not for the want of trying, is it?
No, definitely not. They'd made it every contingency possible. It was always going to be dependent on Cabby going, and as we saw in the summer, that looked stitched on until it wasn't. at whatever time, 8 o'clock on the final day. And as Stuart said, you know, you cannot get people in on a wing and a prayer, A, from a financial point of view, B, from that player's point of view. You know, they're going to say, well, what if this doesn't come off? Am I just going to be sat twiddling my thumbs? And unless under those circumstances you're sort of doubling or trebling the wages or doing something daft, you know, they'd be daft to move as well, wouldn't they? So it's a really difficult one, and easy for the, you know, ordinary supporter to say you should have had it sorted and had a hit list. Well, they've got a hit list, and I'm sure they're working, well, I know they're working diligently through it to try and get the right deal in. And one of the key things from the club's point of view is it's somebody they want, somebody they think will improve the squad, somebody who will retain an asset value, so i.e. is of the right age and they can develop, and someone that's not going to break the bank. And that, you know, as much as we'd like to think we can go out and get anyone, we can't.
Yeah, very, very, very much so. And Paul, it was interesting, your brief conversation with Barnet manager Dean Brennan at the end of the Barnet game after Nicky Kabamba had scored a hat-trick. Yeah, well, you tell the story.
Well, I just stood outside the tunnel, and Dean Brennan had just done his press, and he just says, who are you waiting for, in his Irish accent? I'm not going to do. This is what important. I just said, I'm waiting for a Chesterfield player. And he went, I'll go and get Nicky for you. Nicky Kabamba, obviously been linked with Chesterfield all that week. So yeah, I thought it was very amusing from him. So very funny. Nice chap, Dean Brennan.
Yeah, he is, and Paul Cook really likes him, and he really likes the guy at Boreham Wood as well, whose name's just escaped me.
Luke Garrard.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Luke Garrard. He was having an extensive conversation with him when he first arrived on Saturday. But you know, there were rumours, and we're going on rumours, that there were several clubs after Kabamba, weren't there? But you know, then the 31st came and went, and he was still at Barnet, and you think there was a chance. But if there was anything there, Paul, you'd have expected that to have probably happened by now. And now Barnet are going hell for leather and thinking they might be able to get the third spot.
Well, indeed, you know, it'd be folly for them to really get rid of him in many respects, wouldn't it? But it was a beautifully written story, just not for Chesterfield, wasn't it? That it was just typical, wasn't it? He'd named him and mentioned all blooming week, and then he went and got a. Not only did he score, he went and got a hat trick. You know, so incredible. But yeah, it was just. I think he's destined not for Chesterfield, even though Cook has worked with him at Portsmouth. But he might not even leave, to be honest. He might just think that he's better off where he is while he's in form. Familiarity is good for him. Just stay there and see where he is at the end of the year. So it might be one for the future, not necessarily for the now.
Mm. Absolutely. And Stuart, just back really, one of the issues is, you know, the only realistic, well, who are the realistic targets for a new striker? But if you look at the National League, you think you want to take the National League's lead in strikers. Well, looking at the goals in the National League, Langstaff's top, Mullin's second, Kabamba's third, McShane's fourth, and he's an attacking midfielder rather than a striker. Palmer's fifth, and then the next one, you've got Effiong at Aldershot, and you think, well, yeah, okay, we've seen him a fair bit. There's Dallas at Solihull. There's a couple of other Wrexham players chucked in there, and Notts County players chucked in there as well. And then you're down to people like Linnell John-Lewis at York, who, yeah, they're all right, but they're not going to make a massive improvement. No. But looking at the division, Stuart, looking right down to Halifax in 15th place, they're on 35 points. Southend in 7th place are only on 41. So there's 6 points between a playoff zone and 15th place. So you wouldn't expect any of the team, Halifax and above, to want to let go of their star striker at this stage, would you?
No, absolutely not, which means that if you can persuade them to part with the player, you're going to be paying over the odds for him, aren't you? You can apply the same sort of measure to teams in the divisions below, I suppose. Now, somebody I was talking on one of the media things about the lad at Chester, who's scored a lot of goals, forget his name now. But, you know, if they're hopeful of doing anything this season, they're not going to let go of him if they can avoid it. You know, it has to be an offer that they cannot possibly refuse from a financial point of view if you're going to do that. And that, of course, just adds, you know, to the cost. And if we do have that kind of money to lay around, might we be better looking to spend it on a loan fee for a decent player in the Football League who isn't getting a game? You know,
Willoughby, I think, is your man at Chester. Don't know him, don't know anything about him. But yes, and the Football League, Daz, you know, you're talking about, well, what's average? It's how long's a piece of string, isn't it? But the average wages in League Two are higher than the average wages in the Conference, and the average wages in League One are higher than the average wages in League Two, so on and so forth. And the average wage for a striker is greater than the average wage for a centre back, isn't it? So if you go upwards, you're talking about pretty pennies, aren't you?
Absolutely. This is part of the conundrum, isn't it, for the club? I'm sure we will get someone in. I suspect it might be an EFL loan player and a signing, a more permanent signing from the league below, is my gut feeling. Because you talk about Willoughby at Chester, for instance. 25 years of age. A lot of the players at that level, as we found out when we went hunting down there when James Rowe was manager, have got clauses in their contract to say that they can be released to move higher and can be released for full-time football. If it's a different equation, if you're fishing in the National League North and South pond, than if you're dealing with the National League.
That's exactly what with Tom Whelan. I know we originally signed him from Weymouth, but they were a part-time club. If somebody comes in with a full-time offer, that's your trigger, isn't it? That's your cabbie fixed fee trigger. And talking about cabbie, I know the fee was all about that trigger. But the little bits of tittle-tattle do indicate that there could be things like sell-on clauses and bonuses for promotion and all that sort of thing. So I think the club, who had very little room for manoeuvre, have probably done as well as they could have done out of that.
Yeah, I think so. The guys are astute. The hands were tied to a certain degree. But if rumours are to be believed, you know, the best thing they could do is kind of get a bonus, some kind of bonus if Peterborough's successful and he's successful along with them. And obviously, if Peterborough were to do what they've done on more than one occasion in the past, develop a player and he go for really big money, that we get a nice chunk of it.
Well, they've got, to be fair, they have got a very, very good record, haven't they, of developing players from non-league. And looking at the National League North, because you're more likely to get a player from the National League North than the National League South, I would suggest. The leading scorers there, Beck, who used to be at Harrogate and has relatively recently joined Darlington, to the top of the tree, not necessarily any different.
He's joined Solihull.
Gone to Solihull, that's right. Yes, he has. But he's exactly the same profile as Joe Quigley, isn't he? There's a lad called Hall at Chorley who scored 15. Horton at Fylde, who we know quite well, he played against us many a time, but he was more of an attacking midfielder as well. And then equal top scorer, Jacob Hazel. So I'm not quite sure how old Jacob is now. Let's see if I can just have a quick look for Manchester. Oh, he's still only 28, my word. Yeah, time, I thought it might be older than that. It seems longer ago when he played those two or three games for the Spirites. But yeah, 2012, joined Chesterfield, left 2014. So yeah, he's knocking him in. Jacob Hazel, is there? He always used to be mobile. Played mainly at Chesterfield wide, Stuart, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he played that. He played a home game, didn't he, where he was wide on the left. I can't remember who it was against, but
well, he's been scoring up in the northeast freely over the last year for the likes of Whitby and everybody like that. So, but as you say, it's a big pond in the EFL, and yeah, potential loan players, younger players. With Burnley, with Sean Dyche going to Burnley, you'd have thought straight away John Crew would be on the phone to Burnley, sort of saying, to Everton. Have you got any youngsters you want to go out and play against men? Yeah. And he won't know yet, will he? Because he's only been in the door 10 minutes. Done all right in his 10 minutes through the door, to be fair, beating Arsenal.
I think their young striker Cannon has just gone on loan somewhere in the summer. Everton's highly thought of JPT player that they had, Cannon, I think it was Cannon. I can't remember who it is.
Tom Cannon gone to Preston.
Preston. So he was unlikely to drop to National League.
No, he's too good for National League level, isn't he, as a young man?
Yeah. Well, I remember years and years and years ago, there was a youngster called Harry Kane that everybody was saying we want to try and get him, but he went to Orient, didn't he, instead? I don't know what happened to him.
No.
I'll ask Jimmy Greaves' family. That's the key frustration for supporters at the moment, though, Paul, isn't it? That the fact that there were chances galore at Barnet, chances galore at Bournemouth, zilch in the goals column.
Yeah, like I said before, it's just ironic, isn't it, that you sell your leading scorer and then you score one goal in four games around that particular time. So, but it's going to be difficult. It's unlikely, that it's not often that you sell your top scorer in January. Chesswell have done it twice, really, in the periods that they've had it, that they've had, because a good deal has come in for them. That's what it generally is. But not many sides would sell their prized asset, I suppose. That's why it's difficult to buy. It's easy to sell, but it's difficult to buy unless you've got money. And Chesterfield haven't got loads of money, much as people speculate around the national media about Chesterfield being what they are, with good crowds and whatnot. At the end of the day, they're run by a charity. And getting money in, via the attendances and selling their players is one way of making funds. Chesterfield have to find a gem from somewhere, and or loan a gem from somewhere. But even that's a gamble, isn't it? A youngster coming in to come into a side that's going in straight in for promotion. It's not an easy task for them. The pressure's on right now, and it is not going to be easy. Are they going to go for a junior? Are they going to go for somebody experienced?
Fapula again, do we?
We
don't want David Fapula, whatever his name was.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But Stuart, we could debate this for hours, and we're not going to. But of course, Paul Cook's got form. He saw off Jack Lester and did pretty well on the back of that.
Well, yeah. That wasn't a popular decision, was it? But yes, you just have to trust in his ability, really, to sort of pull out a plum, don't you? Which he does from time to time. We all spoke very highly about his summer recruitment, didn't we? And the players were exciting and all that lot, and we had players, that have subsequently moved on, several of them since then. So it is a continuously stirred pot, I suppose, from that point of view. But you do have to just
as our historian, let's not forget, Stuart, that 52 points from 26 games, if that's continued to the end of the season, that will be our best return since 3 points for a game came into play in the 1970s, end of the 1970s, early 80s.
Absolutely. It, and it's just it's just unfortunate that in a season that would normally see us, cruising to the title, there are two teams who happen to be having what must be their best seasons on record themselves, you know? So what do you do? I mean, you know, we might finish third and be disappointed, but imagine finishing second in this division the way it's set up at the moment. Yeah, yeah, imagine finishing one point behind whoever is first. You might be 15 points in front of us by then, you know?
Yeah.
And you're still just going to be in the playoffs.
That's the irony, Daz, isn't it? That whoever does finish second is going to be really hacked off. And I said in my column on the website on Sunday that now I think we all just need to say, right, okay, we could still win the league. Yes, of course we could. Will we win the league? No. But let's just go for that third spot. Back of the third spot. Our opponents are now Woking and Barnet, not Notts County and Wrexham. Do you agree?
Not over till it's over. But I think that's predicated by us needing a striker or two. I think if we get two strikers in before the weekend, I still think it's all to play for. But in any event, we have to be looking at no worse than third. Because I think if we finish no worse than third, I'll take any of the teams below us in a one-off game at home.
Yeah,
and then I'll take anybody in a one-off game at Wembley.
Yeah.
If you played anybody at Wembley, would you rather have Notts County or Wrexham?
I'd rather Wrexham go up. You'd rather Wrexham go up? Yeah, because while ever they're in this division, with their buying power, they're going to be a pain in the you-know-what. Mm-hmm. So let them get out of the way, because I think we're better than Notts anyway, and I think we'll prove it. On Saturday, and I think we proved it down at Notts. In a one-off game, I think we beat Notts County. And they aren't as big a long-term threat to get out of this division or a bigger stumbling block to get out of this division as Wrexham are. So that's why when we were all chortling to ourselves last May when Grimsby produced that magnificent 5-4 win at the racecourse, there was a little bit of me thinking, I wish that hadn't have happened. You know, that we needed them out of the way last year because you wouldn't be getting that kind of investment from Grimsby this year.
No, absolutely right. And talking about Notts County, Paul, of course, at Jesterhill on Saturday, and Macaulay Langstaff, they pulled a plum there. You can't say that because he came from a division below. Part-time team. He's not going to be costing a fortune on wages unless they've renewed his contract, which I don't know about. So I assume he's not on top dollar. But looking at his stats, the first half of the games that Notts County have played this season, he was averaging slightly over one a game. The second half, he's only been averaging one every two games. So is that people are sussing him out? Or what? Because his frequency of scoring now is not the same.
There'll be partly that, won't they? There'll be partly the fact that defences have tightened up on him. And they've got all the video evidence they need now after half the season, haven't they, to see what games he's been prolific in, how he got his goals, where he positioned himself, what scenarios they're in, and they cater for absolutely everything. These days, is it just tiredness from his point of view? A lot of expectation on him at the start of the season. He was replacing a striker, and I know he's got his colleague with him as well for a bit of creature comforts there. But all of a sudden, with the deals been ramped up because of the pressure on him performing at a side like Notts County, they're out expected to go up. They pay a lot more in wages than Chesterfield do. They got a bit more resource from somewhere. I don't quite know where it is, but it's coming from somewhere. So, is he feeling that sort of big club mentality? Is that affecting him psychologically going into the second half? But it'd be important to or interesting to see how he copes with that. They have got replacements. They've just sent Cairo Mitchell out on loan, haven't they? Yeah. So, it's going to be tough for him second half of the season to keep up with himself, isn't it? If anything, his scoring record's been phenomenal. It's been really good. I don't really know what what more he could have done this season. He's been excellent, hasn't he? And you know, it'll be a shame if his goals don't fire Notts County to the title. I'm going to go against Daz here. I want Notts County to get promoted. I want Wrexham to stay in the National League for as long as possible. So because it'll be funnier every season that they are.
Yeah.
That said about Langstaff and is still impressive, but not as impressive scoring record. It's not stopped Notts County scoring, has it, Paul?
Well, no, it hasn't. No, they've been really, really good. I mean, for them to match what Wrexham have done and even sort of overtake them in the goal scoring credits is unbelievable. I don't really know how they've done it, because he's got a really small squad, hasn't he? But a consistent amount of players that they've got that have played majority of games. So he's obviously likes a tightness of the squad that he's got. He prefers to have a bit of loyalty from his players. Work with a small group, and you know, signing two strikers who catapulted Gateshead into the National League last season doesn't half go well, doesn't it, for him? Notts County fans are not talking about Kyle Wootton, are they, right now? They're not talking about him at all. So it's all about Macaulay Langstaff and, to a certain extent, Kedwin Scott. So well done to them.
And just as a side, I'm sure people have seen or worked out for themselves, one of his partners in crime, Rodriguez, is defender for our match on Saturday. So perhaps the most talented of the Notts County players won't be playing. So
anyway, yeah, it's a big bonus, isn't it?
Let's talk about other players out rather than so many ins. We've got Colclough in, of course. But Joe Cook sold down to Dorking. Stewart had been on loan there, came back, then was sold on. He was always one for the future. Players always spoke very well of him in training. So I don't think it was a surprise for him to go on loan. But I was a bit surprised when he moved permanently, Stewart.
Yes, I was a bit. I suppose, unless you can play in the first team here, you can't play, can you? You know, there's no competitive reserve football. And you can't deny somebody the opportunity to play football. But yeah, I was a bit surprised that we sold him. Perhaps we are trying to put money in the bank for this forward that we're looking for. That's the only reason I could think of for actually doing it. Although at the end of the season, is he going to come back up here and be ready to sort of stake a full-time place
team?
Would he still be in a position where he'd come back up and not get games? So from his point of view,
would he be ahead of Tyrone Williams is the question, isn't exactly, it? Who's not inside at the moment. So no question about it. And Daz, Cooper released. Don't think we can be at all surprised with that. Never really got his fitness thing going pretty because he showed. But then the loans out, Whelan, Gyasi and Clark. Whelan had played a little bit of football when he came back for his loan at Aldershot. Clark had not really got back in and seemed to be a little bit glass hammies, as we often say. Gassi had no chance really in the first team. We know he's quick, but not had any chance. I suspect a lot of that was about getting numbers off the wage bill.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And if players weren't of the required standard, whether we thought they'd been given a fair enough crack of the whip or not, you've got to rely on the management who brought them in good faith, thought they could do a job and would be pushing for first team places. But in reality, having seen how they played in reserve games and the odd behind closed doors and other things, if they then decide that they're really not going to add anything to the mix and we need to reduce the wage bill, which we've been on about right since the summer, you could see the logic in letting them go. The other thing is, of course, even on a half-season loan, after the first 28 days, you do have a recall clause. So it's not as if we're hamstrung totally by letting them go, should we need in an emergency to pull in somebody that we know, rather than bringing somebody we don't know. So I think that made eminent sense from the club's point of view, and obviously released, again, a bit more money potentially for incoming wages.
And Paul, to follow up that point that Daryl just made, Cooper, Whelan, Gyasi, and Clark, or as he'll now be known as in your notes, and someone else, and I know he's got out loan, but I can't quite remember what I'm talking about, aka Jack Clark. You know, they weren't bothering the first team. So would you rather have Ryan Colclough than those four?
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah, I called for Ryan Colclough, didn't I? The Christmas wish list or whatever it was. Well, certainly, look, I mean, they've sold Chemanga, Chesterfield have, and Gyasi's been sent out on loan. So I know that happened just before they sold Chemanga, but if they were desperate enough to realise that Chemanga was always going to go, Gyasi wouldn't have gone. So he's not likely to be troubling the first team anytime soon. If at all, you know, so whether it's his lifestyle, I'm not too sure, but he does like to glam it up a little bit, considering he can't get in the Altrincham team at the minute either. He played in the Cheshire Cup or whatever they play in, and apparently he was awful in that game. So it's hard to raise your game, I'm sure, for that. But, you know, you got an impression, you want to play football your life, you know, and there's your opportunity, and there's a reason why now you're not playing in the first 11 for Altrincham, isn't there? So Jack Clark needs to get games under his belt, because otherwise he's going to be mentally troubled by this hamstring problem that he thinks he has, I think. So, but he just needs games. Again, he was left out the other week, but I know he played on Saturday, but was subbed at half time. So what's the issue with that? So I just think it's a combination of, well, Tom Whelan came in against Halifax. He was dreadful, wasn't he, that game? Yeah. Been playing, while they've been winning, he'd been playing a little bit, but he was playing out of, I think, because they had nobody else to play. And he's been largely disappointing ever since he's come back, and he's been back a year. Like you said, I can't see any of them coming back and getting in the side. I just hope we've got a big sell-on clause for Joe Cook, because he's the only one, I think.
As the BBC frequently say, other terrible players are available at Halifax.
Yeah, indeed. They weren't very good, yes. That is true.
And just to follow on the Colclough thing, Paul, he's had a couple of appearances. So far, what you made of him?
Yeah, I think it looks pretty good. He looks very much a left-hand side, doesn't he? He tends to favour that one much more than the opposite. But there were spells, wasn't there, in the first couple of games that we've seen, where he's looked really bright and on point. And he likes to cut inside rather than going on the outside a lot more. So that fits in with the three behind the one. I think if you're going to play four behind the lone striker, I'm not sure he fits in that, does he, really? He's an out-and-out winger. He seems to play better when there's a three, slightly tucked in. So Mandeville, Dobber and Colclough, whilst it's attacking, and it played on Saturday, and it was very attacking, wasn't it? The only problem is he didn't have a striker who could put the ball in the back of the net at that time. So, like I say, glimpses. But one thing I've noticed so far, he might not be up to the levels of fitness that Paul Cook wants, because he's been subbed twice now on 60 or 70 minutes. Of course, what does that bring in? It brings in an absolute speed merchant, doesn't it? A new Kegbalum. And like, you're looking at opposite sides thinking, oh my God, how fast is he? And he's just come on as a sub. So, you know, that's the bonus there. And Woking manager Darren Soiles alluded to the fact that he thinks his side's really fit after a certain period of the game, the latter stages. Well, at least Chester would have got options to kind of change that and max him up. So we'll see on Tuesday night, of course.
Stuart, one guy who's been getting a lot of social media stick in the last week or two, Jamie Grimes. I think it's unfair. He has a bad game every now and then. Of course he does. Mm. But the worst game he had was against West Brom, 83 divisions further up than Chesterfield. So no big surprise. Is he getting a fair or an unfair crack of the whip at the moment from the people who put their head above a parapet and say things, because there's thousands that don't?
Yeah, I think it's a bit unfair, really. I don't know if Paul Cook would have signed him if he hadn't been here, because, you know, he doesn't look like the kind of comfortable on the ball, playing it backwards and forwards among yourselves centre-half kind of centre-half that, you know, a sort of a Sam Hurd or something that Paul Cook might like. But on the whole, I think that the criticism of him is broadly unfair. He had a patch against, was it Altrincham, the last home game, where he couldn't seem to find his own man for 20 minutes or so. But, you know, there was one particular one right across the defence when it was really high up that he tried to play to Ash Palmer that just went nowhere near anybody, really, and you know, made me kind of shield my eyes a bit. But on the whole, it's unfair, because he brings proper kind of National League defending to a National League team, doesn't he? You know, he's a big guy, he's resolute, he's good in the air, you know, and he can tackle well. And you're not going to get a complete player at this level, whether you're number 1 to 11. There's always going to be something wrong with you that makes you a National League player instead of a League One player or something, isn't there?
Yeah. And as he has been selected by Paul Cook to play every minute of every National League game this season, the only player to have done so. So at this stage, Paul Cook hasn't fancied doing what a lot of supporters are suggesting, playing either Palmer or Williams left-sided with the other one at the right side, because Palmer looks the business, doesn't he?
He does. I think we knew what we were getting with Palmer. And for me, Grimes, he's had a solid enough season. He can look slightly ungainly at times on the ball, but by the same token, he's a left footer, so he does give you that balance on that side. He's clearly ahead in the pecking order with Lawrence, because he was the one retained and Lawrence was the one put on the transfer list.
I think that's the physicality element rather than anything else, isn't it?
Well, yeah, potentially so. But, you know, had Cookie been really upset with him, as you say, he could easily have shuffled Palmer to the left and brought Williams in, or put Williams in on the left. Alternatively, he could have just chucked all the toys out of the pram and brought Lawrence in, knowing he'd got at least a left foot like-for-like replacement. He hasn't done that. So, yeah, I think some of the criticism, as ever with these things, it's never all black and white. It's a little bit grey, but the ones who do raise their head above the parapet tend to be the ones who are loudest and at least rational very often, I find. Yeah, that's the only way I could really sum it up.
We go on for hours if we talked about every individual player, and we can't necessarily do that. We want to have a look forward and everything along those lines, but a little bit more of a look back. But I'm going to ask you all a quick fire question, and then one that's, I want a quick fire answer, but it's slightly less quick fire. The quick fire question I'm going to ask you is Fitzsimons or Kovalan. And then the secondary quick fire question is, if Danny Rowe was fit, would he be in your starting 11? If so, for whom? So Paul's just covered his face up with his jacket. I can see, so he's thinking, I don't want to be first. Body language was there, don't ask me first. So Paul, Kovalan or Fitzsimons?
Fitzsimons. It always has been, ever since he arrived temporarily after the Kovalan sending off. The second answer is yes, Danny Rowe, either side, Dobra and Colclough. Danny Rowe in the 10, just behind the striker.
So in essence, compared to Saturday in for Mandeville?
Yes.
Yeah. Stu, goalkeeper?
Fitzsimons. Danny Rowe, I don't know. When you say fully fit, has he now been magically made quick enough to play the lone forward role?
If any of you bring him in the side as a lone forward role, I'd be surprised.
Well, yeah, I know. So would you play him in place of...
I agree exactly with what Paul said. That's what I'd do.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm. Yes, he'd be worth putting in there, wouldn't he?
Mm. Yeah.
Yes. Got a brain, hasn't he? Experience, you know.
Yes.
Brings other people in.
Well, just by standing on the centre spot, he picks out passes. There's him and Banks can pick out Hollywood passes, and Rowe does it 99 times out of 100, seemingly.
Yeah.
The trouble with him is a lot of the players aren't on the same wavelength of him. He's so good, technically, that a lot of the players aren't on the same wavelength as him. But goalkeeper, Daz.
Coverland for me.
I just
love the panic amongst the supporters when he's doing his antics at the back. I think it's worth the entrance fee alone. for me, Danny Rowe will be centre forward, as he was at Halifax. And he would easily cope with that role. He loves playing with his back to goal and having people on the half turn running past him. I think he'd make a huge difference to us. And
so Rowe for Quigley for you.
Yeah. And if a chance dropped to him, you could almost guarantee it'll hit the target. It may not go in, but it'll hit the target.
I think I think Mandeville's looking a bit tired. Sorry, Phil, at the minute.
Yeah.
He just needs a little spell out of the team, I think, at the moment. That's because he's probably made one more appearance than the club actually officially recognised him for. So,
all right.
A joke between me and Stuart.
But and he's become a 90-minute player, which he hasn't been for 3 years.
Yes. You
know, so he is playing 90 minutes more often. He never, ever did before. Yeah, Daryl was on about Danny Rowe, Mandeville. There was something I was going to say, something very, very important there, but I've completely forgotten what I was going to say. But anyway, we'll be back in seconds to talk about other stuff. Well, our favourite Chesterfield podcaster, Dave from Legend of the Spire, he's spotted, like many people have done, Kieran Dyer around the place in Chesterfield tracksuits. Do you know what's going off there, Daryl?
Absolutely not, Phil. No, I know he was part of Cookie's backroom team at Ipswich, so I can only assume he's either in keeping his hand in, so to speak, and has been asked to do so, or he's just volunteered services because he's sat at home and the wife's fed up with him. But I haven't said anything official. Yeah.
No, neither have I. And I've seen him around a bit, but I don't know if he's looking to qualify for badges and everything, but people who are looking for badges that aren't in a job are always welcome at clubs because it brings a fresh face in, doesn't it, and everything along those lines. But yeah, he's spotted around quite a bit. Great experience, England international, of course, and all of that stuff. And, there was a vacancy on the bench a couple of weeks ago, Stu, with Paul Cook having another two-match touchline ban. And he was still able to talk to the bench and everything along those lines. But is that just his passion overflowing a bit?
I think he gets frustrated, doesn't he? I mean, yes, he is a passionate football man, and I think he gets a bit frustrated, not necessarily always just with officials, but you know, if you're stood next to the fourth official, it's just like having a pet cat to shout at in it, really. You know.
Yeah. Well, one of the first things he did when he came back was swap the dugouts back so he was further away from the
linesman. Unfortunately, the fourth official stands.
Yeah, I did write at the start of his return, say, that's a good idea because you've probably not seen many National League officials. But so, he did have a bit of a contretemps with members of the Chesterfield crowd at Boreham Wood on Saturday, Paul, didn't he?
He did, he certainly did. Yes, there was an incident in the corner. I think he went off to chase for a ball to quickly get it to somebody to throw back, and he thought he was applauding the supporters, but then they started giving a bit of stick, and then he started giving a bit of stick back, I think. So you don't really mess with Paul Cook, to be honest. He'll tell you exactly what he thinks of the scenario and everything, and he alluded to you in no uncertain terms in the 1866 radio post-match interview, didn't he? So I'm sure he would have said, Andy, he said that to the DT as well in their interview, but not in not as many words, I don't think. So he's obviously frustrated, but I get it. I get Chesterfield fans' frustration, the fact that, you know, the scenario is what it is at the moment, but, you know, enjoy it. Just enjoy where they are at the moment. You know, third place in the table. Blooming heck, like, so we haven't had a season like this for donkey's years. Yeah, sorry, but yeah, you know.
Good tomorrow night. Tuesday night.
This will be going out on Wednesday, I think, I'm afraid. So I'm busy tomorrow.
We'll be third already. Third already. Edit my bit out, Paul, and say, hey, I was right.
I was right all along. Yeah. But you know,
and it was a great hat trick from our new striker against Woking.
Fabulous, weren't it? Fabulous. Brilliant. Yeah. Beep, beep.
Whoever thought great, playing King at centre forward would play off. Yeah.
But you know, we enjoy the season.
Yeah,
I agree. I absolutely agree. But some of us are long enough in the tooth to know the difference between really good and really bad, and pretty good and pretty bad, and average. And this is, under normal circumstances, really good. It just doesn't feel like that at the moment.
You know, it just happens that there are two teams that are, as I say, having record-breaking really seasons above us. You know, what can you do? You can just keep going out trying to win your own games, can't you?
Yeah, we've alluded to the Boreham Wood and Barnet games, so I'm not going to sort of go into detail about that. But, you know, before that, it was a hard-working win, Stuart, over Altrincham 1-0. So it's no goals, and only one goal in the last three. So so that striker element, that lack of goals element, isn't just the North London problem.
No, it is a problem. And it is the biggest single problem, I think, that obviously the club has to face at the moment, has to try and solve somehow. But let's not forget that Altrincham were a form team of some sort when they came here, weren't they? They'd done
10 unbeaten or something like that.
Yeah, especially away from home. You know, they don't concede very many. Didn't concede very many against us. They just conceded enough, you know. And people seem to say, well, you know, I'll have 46 grubby 1-0 wins and we'll be champions. I'll have that. But then as soon as you go and grubby 1-0 win, everybody's kind of saying, well, why aren't we scoring 4 or 5, you know? So, you know, if you're prepared to put up with grubby 1-0 wins, then put up with them, you know, is the thing. And you know, teams aren't going to come and let us do it, are they? You know, start of the season, opposition don't really know what to expect, and it's easier to play well and beat teams handsomely. But and then as the season goes on, and you know, we alluded to this possibility earlier with Macaulay Langstaff's apparent dry spell, you know, which is only a goal every other game. That's only 20 odd goals a season, isn't it? Perhaps people do get used to ways of playing against you. It used to happen to Paul Cook's team. When we were in League One, teams would, you know, would suss us out, wouldn't they? You know, and certain teams,
as we sussed out MK Dons at that time.
Indeed. You know, teams would come up and there'd be, you know, sort of 11 men behind the ball and all that kind of business. And we'd play around them and across them and just in front of them and all of that, and we'd never actually be able to get through them. Well, you know, that. Every single football system, you know, we beat Wrexham by the simple expedient of not conceding a throw-in anywhere inside our half. You know, so if you could, you know, if you can know what you've got to do to beat the opposition, but until kind of halfway through a season, perhaps when you've played them once, you don't necessarily have that crystallized, you know. But now, teams do get used to how other teams play and can combat that, you know.
And of course, Wrexham lose their centre half, who's vital to. To hate Hayden, who's vital to that, and they go out and sign a regular from Charlton Athletic. So, it just shows what what they can afford.
I'd sooner have them at Wembley in the playoffs than not. Certainly,
I mean,
after Saturday, we might come back and revisit that question, but you know, I'll let you know.
Yes,
but,
yeah. And prior to that Altrincham game, we had the weekly postponement at Wheelstone, which seems to happen more often than we actually. But I think I'm sure, probably Stuart, this might be the first team that we've ever had more postponed games against than we've ever had real games against Wheelstone. It'd be worth a check.
Yeah, I think it must be that one. 3-4 now, is it? We must have had that.
We've had plenty of postponed. But before that,
it was, of course.
Yeah. No, they'd have a distinct advantage on their own pitch with that.
It'd be nice if we could play them at top of a hill rather than the bottom of one.
Yes. Scunny, the 4-1 win over Scunny was there, which was, you know, wasn't an absolute 4-1 match, was it? We were a lot better than Scunthorpe, but they were better than 4-1 suggests, and we weren't perhaps as good as 4-1 suggests, but did the business. But of course, the start of the year talk was all about West Brom, and a little bit like the 97 FA Cup semi-final, we'll forget the replay, that's not existed, and talk about the first match. How good was that, Dad?
Oh, we were tremendous. I mean, we... To concede as early as we did in the way in which we did, because as soon as the ball went out to Grant and he was one-on-one with Jeff, we all knew the cross was coming in, and it was a terrific finish from Asante, slightly behind him and rifled into the roof of the net, and you thought, oh, here we go, you know. But in fairness, you know, it didn't rattle us. We settled quite quickly, started opening them up and got a well-deserved equaliser, didn't we, from the set piece, which had been well worked with the, I think it was Grimes, wasn't it, pulling onto the back peg and Willie just poking it in. And then, of course, contrived to concede another fairly soft goal with two touches. Adam Reach, it was a decent ball, actually, but down the middle, and they were a player at that level isn't going to miss that opportunity, although Ross did his best to keep it out. And then to go in front by half time, deservedly so. And I think you'd only got to read the comments of various West Brom supporters to say that when they got the, as we now know, infamous equaliser for a man that shouldn't have even been on the pitch, they thought we'd been terrific, both in terms of the team and the support and, you know, the whole day. But you only get one chance very often. Experience tells you only get one chance at a giant killing, and we had ours, and for a combination of reasons couldn't get over the line. But as a day, it was a terrific advert for the club, for the National League. And you were proud to be a Spirite, weren't you, that afternoon?
And whilst, Stuart, we were never in doubt that the crowd would play the part that day, they really came to life when Town went 1-0 down in those first few minutes. Mm. It almost seemed to galvanise the crowd, that concession, didn't it?
Well, it did in a funny sort of way, didn't it? Because, you know, there was the perfect opportunity for everybody just to sit in their seats all the rest of the game thinking, woe is us, you know, can't go out tonight in case I see anybody I know who supports somebody else and all that sort of thing. But no, people just got going, didn't they? I think having fans in W7, of course, helps. Mm. You know, having boisterous fans in W7 helps, but all different parts of the ground picked it up, I think, and everybody, you know, was kind of was throwing their weight behind the team properly as they should do. I mean, you know, the team played well, and that makes it easy to do that. Sometimes if a team isn't playing well, it's less easy to, you know, get yourself excited enough to do all that. But no, they you know, the team played well enough to deserve the support they got, and the supporters got the performance that their support merited as well.
Yeah, but yeah, it was wonderful. And Paul, you'll have heard the West Brom press conferences. They were really complimentary in both matches, to be honest, weren't they?
They certainly were. And before we answer that, we can hear from the goals, courtesy of BBC Radio Sheffield.
Italian FA Cup fixture it is, as Chesterfield welcome aside, 66 places above them in the pyramid. Here's play over the far side with Carlin Grant, gets to the byline, left foot across, comes in, shot comes in, and a goal. What a stunning goal that is from Brandon Thomas Asante. No messing, Carlin Grant's first cross from the left-hand side. A minute and 30 seconds gone. Grant's cross, Thomas Asante lashed the ball in past Fitzsimons. And the Baggy supporters to the left-hand side are right behind their side. And the Baggies have the lead. It's Chesterfield 0, West Bromwich Albion 1. King finds Dobra. Back to King again. Chance for a strike, maybe. He takes one touch, puts the ball onto his left. Left foot across to the back post. And Grant is there, and so is Williams! And the Birmingham City found his Tyrone Williams with his fourth goal of the season. And Chesterfield have equalised after 7 minutes. They went a goal down pretty quickly after 90 seconds, but their first major threat. Grimes' header across, Tyrone Williams nodded in for his fourth goal of the season, and after 7 minutes it's Chesterfield 1, West Brom 1. It's a good challenge from Akinola, but Baggies win it back. A through ball from Reach, look at the Carlin Grant, beats the offside trap. Grant then up against Fitzsimons, he shoots and he scores, and Carlin Grant, he's applied the first, and this time he scores, been sent through by Reach, and Carlin Grant puts the Baggies back in front, grabbing his fifth goal of the season. And it's West Bromwich Albion 2, Chesterfield 1. Short pass from Mandeville finds Oldacre. And now back for King. King short down the lines for Mandeville. Gets to the byline, right foot across. It's Dobra! And Dobra scored again in the FA Cup. 35 gone. Chesterfield have levelled yet again. Armando Dobra with his seventh goal of the season. And that all allowed for Mandeville's beautiful cross from the right. And Dobra scored in every round so far for the Spirites, and he's scored again. 35 gone, Chesterfield 2, West Brom 2. Akinola trying to get a foot in there. Jones then trying to beat in front of Carlin Grant. Mandeville gives the ball away. Mandeville's there, moves the ball across for Dobra. Mandeville's caught late by Ashworth. Dobra trying to thread the ball through for Quigley, who the flag stays down. Quigley shoots, saved by Button. Dobra shoots and scores! And Chesterfield have taken the lead for the first time in this game. His first half is raining goals. 40 minutes gone, and Dobra gets his second, his eighth goal of the season. And Chesterfield are in front against their championship rivals. It's Chesterfield 3, West Bromwich Albion 2. Opportunity here for a strike maybe from Gardner. Hinckman chips the ball forward, the flag stays down, the header goes in from Thomas Asante, the flag stays down, a little chip into the area, and that heartbroken Spirites as Baggins fans run onto the field. They levelled matters. It's Thomas Asante again. It's Chesterfield 3, West Bromwich Albion 3. In stoppage time, the championship side have pulled a goal back from out of nowhere. And Chesterfield and the Baggies could be heading for the Hawthorns in 10 days' time.
So it was tremendous occasion. The media afterwards are gushing about how Chesterfield had played. We had the press box was packed, Phil, wasn't it? That was the most full I've ever seen it at the technique. It was incredible. I mean, I think Nick was saying they had to send some people away, I think, for applications, you know, for the press. So, which was pretty good. And the positive reaction that the club got overall for the positive performance that they put in, the crowd were excellent. Really, really good. Where Stuart stands or sits at W7, they were all right up for that, weren't they? In that occasion, that really helped with the atmosphere and yeah, just generally overall, we managed to because at one stage, weren't they, Daryl, they're going to give tickets to the East Block, weren't they, to the E1 and E2 or whatever, it was going to go to West Brom, weren't they? So I'm glad the Chesterfield public came out and stopped that.
It was just a commercial decision, wasn't it, by the club? Let's hold those two sections back. If we don't look like selling them, West Brom will. And, you know, we need the money, don't we? But as it turned out, the locals did their stuff, and I'm sure every single one that made the effort in these difficult financial times thought it was a good investment. I mean, what a terrific performance. And when we were talking about the crowd earlier, you know, that there were two episodes in the two games when the crowd started singing "We Are Sailing" with about 5 minutes to go. And I've never heard it sung better, both at the Hawthorns and certainly at the Technique. And, you know, it was hairs standing up on the back of the neck stuff. It was terrific, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was one of those days that we'll all do it. I was there. So, yeah, to be fair, the 97 semi-final, everybody who says I was there probably was. but there are plenty of I was there games. I know that at least 3,000 more people than were really there were there.
Yeah, right, yeah. My but, father.
No, it is. You were saying about that E1, E2 block at the point the club decided not to send them to West Brom, which was always going to be the initial plan. There were still quite a few hundred tickets left.
Yeah.
In the ground, so it would have been a much easier decision to send them to West Brom, much easier. But well, the fans responded and did really, really well, didn't they? And performed as well as they performed for an awful long time, because there was a lot to get them going, that's no question. And for saddos like you and me, Stuart, just great to be able to tick West Brom off as a team you've played that haven't been played for such a long time, 1948 or whatever. So I was one of the few who, when the draw was made, was ridiculously excited, because we'd never played West Brom before.
Yeah, but it was a really good draw from that point of view. You know, it's what you want, isn't it? It's something different every year, something that just, you know, has a bit of interest to it, you know, instead of Rochdale or whatever, you know.
It's like London buses, though, Stu. You wait 48 years and then play them twice in 10 days. So,
Well, that was good. A bit more coin, wasn't it? You know, which purpose of the replay for me? I didn't particularly want to see us have to go through and you know, get bogged down with a cup run like Boreham Wood did last year, you know.
Well, looking forward, Chesterfield have got a decent home record this season, no question about draws. That. We can't complain too much about that. Is it seven home wins on the trot, is it now?
Seven on the trot, 11 out of 13. Yeah. No draws at this stage. That's what hampered them last season. No.
And in our next six games, assuming they're all on, there's four home and two away. So we've got 2-2-2. We've got Woking and Notts at home, Aldershot, Solihull away, Wealdstone and Oldham at home. So the big games are the next two, and then you look at the next four and you think, well, we should get something in all of them. And I know it doesn't work that way, but you know, Woking's last night, so we don't know how that went on. This is going out on Wednesday, so we don't know how that. So, Notts up next,
8-all.
You know, predictions on that?
I fancy us at home against anybody. That's 6 points. That's it. That's my prediction. 6 points.
Well, from Woking and Notts.
And then Aldershot is another rearrange. Well, that was rearranged because of the cup. That wasn't a postponement, wasn't it? Rearranged from the cup. But all of a sudden, they've strung a few results together, and they're on the absolute bottom end of potential playoff contenders. But you know, they've seemed to turn themselves from relegation battlers. Only seems 5 minutes ago to potential playoff contenders. And looking at the last seven games, they've won four, drawn two. So that's why they've suddenly moved up the table. Oh, no.
Ross
sorry,
McNeely, isn't it? Ross McNeely is the coach. He's been a coach at some other clubs as well, I think, including Newcastle, I think, for a little while. But he's one of these up and coming coaches that they seem to bring in. Manager bounce, getting good results from a young side that he's got there. We'll see whether they've got the consistency or the experience to beat Chesterfield. But I think that might be a banana skin, that one, anyway. Speaking of the shoulder shot, it's been 2 years. I was reminded today, 2 years since all the press turned up for the FA Trophy game, only to expect the team news and instead get a postponement at 2 o'clock.
Yeah. For some reason, I chose not to go that day, and I was watching the stream and was giggling to myself a little bit. But I thought, oh, yeah, because we played them twice in, well, we were due to play them Saturday, Tuesday,
yeah.
League and Cup, weren't we, or League and Trophy. And I couldn't make both games, so I went to the league game. But have you seen who all should have signed this month, or last month now, January? Talking about banana skins. They've signed the delightful Haji Manoga. The man who broke Cabby's leg.
Yes, yeah.
And almost started a near right at Rotherham, didn't he, as well, when he was somewhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
never did it at Tratton Park, which is why they why they never kept him. But just used to go.
Yeah. Well, I did see him play for Portsmouth 3 or 4 days after he played against us for Bromley. He got recalled and he played in. He was in the League Cup team when I went to a match down at AFC Wimbledon to go to the ground. So Minoga's back. So warning on that one. And then Solihull, of course, have got. Whelan on loan. I assume he'll not be able to play in that. But, you know, it's with all those home games coming up, it's an opportunity to try and put some daylight between Woking and Barnet. But we've no say in what Barnet do because we've played them the two times this year and they're on a real roll now. But Chesterfield in pole position. Are they going to hold that third spot, Stuart, till the end of the season?
I think so. Yeah. I Woking have done fantastically well. Will they ever wobble?
Yeah, they turned full time at the beginning of last season, didn't they? So they're into that full time element now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and they've obviously recruited wisely and got, you know, consistent players in the team. Have they had a wobble yet? I don't know. You know, everybody has one.
Well,
don't
they've,
they?
Very con- they've been very. Con- they started quite slowly, I think, but they've been very consistent away from home.
Yeah,
they've no question about that. They know how to eke out an away win. But looking at their record in the National League, they've not lost three on the trot. They've lost two on the trot once, or twice now because. They lost at Chesterfield last night. Yeah, and that was back in August. They lost back to backs at Barnet and at home to Wrexham. You know, 3-2 against Wrexham. So, but no, since then, we don't know the result of the match at the Technique. But they've not lost two on the trot. So, yes, they've been very consistent.
And, well, it's funny, isn't it? Because you expect Wrexham and Notts to keep that consistency up. So why shouldn't Woking? I don't know. Perhaps there's going to be...
Whereas Barnet are in a good run now. They've got a long unbeaten run going on now. And they had a troubled time in early autumn.
They did,
you know,
didn't they?
Had a run of 2, 4, 6, 8 or 9 games where they only won 2 and lost 5, 5 or 6. You know, so they've had a bad spell, but they've got going. You know,
I wonder how many teams in the league this year will get enough points and not go up, but a level of points that would have taken them up in a previous season. You know, if Woking keep going and we can keep going and the top two keep going. Yeah, Barnet keep going.
And then the fact that the top two are accruing points at a ridiculous rate of knots means there's less further down the table, which means that's why there's so many teams in with a shout of a playoff zone.
Yeah.
Right down to that 15th place that we were saying. And it is a somewhat topsy turvy division. And if you look at the bottom. End really, Maidstone look doomed. They're 6 points from safety, but they've played more games than everybody above them, you know, 4 more games than Oldham, who are fifth bottom. So they've played the most games and are bottom. So Maidstone look doomed. Who knows what's going to happen at Scunny with their change in ownership and all their new players coming in? But as we know, when you're on the tumble, bringing in new players doesn't necessarily work.
No. Speaking of Scunthorpe, lack
consistency. Yeah.
Speaking of Scunthorpe, they've just signed Danny Elliott from Bournemouth. about 50 minutes ago, so from undisclosed
speed. That's interesting. That's interesting, because you and I, well, we were speculating that he might be one, because we'd heard of being called back from Gateshead to Boreham Wood to be sold on to another National League club, and we were thinking, oh, it could be could be him, because he scored a few at Gateshead, but he was on the bench on Saturday, wasn't he?
So, they've sponsored that thing. But still, they've got a lot of making up to do, haven't they, Scunthorpe?
They have. Torquay are just too inconsistent. Gateshead, a fourth bottom, is going to be a big ask for them. And then you've got Oldham and Dorky, but Dorky are falling like a stone at the moment, aren't they? They're really, really struggling to get victories. And, you know, again, I think they surprised a lot of people early on in the season with
they can't defend. They played. Yeah, they can't defend. Joe Cook was sent off, wasn't he?
Yeah, their last four games have ended in a 4-0 defeat at Eastleigh, a 5-1 home defeat against Oldham, a 3-0 home defeat against Solihull, and they lost on Saturday 2-0 at Aldershot. So, you know, 9, 12, 14 goals shipped in the last four games, and they've only scored one. So that's why all of a sudden they plunged down. And, I'd like to think that they'll stay up. You know, it would be a terrific story if they did stay up. Much more of a story if they stayed up than Wrexham going up.
The thing is, though, as well, with Manchester City obviously accruing a lot of breaches, third place might be okay after all.
That would be something, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, cutting at straws, Paul, but there is some validity in that. No question about it. And, of course, we were all relieved when Scunthorpe got taken over, when you think they might go pop in the middle because we'd taken all 6 points off them. And I'm delighted that they'll see the end of the season. Well, hopefully see the end of the season out. I'm not quite sure that their new ownership will offer the fans the delight that they want it to. But it's fresh. It's a bit of freshness, isn't it? In their South End, keep on battling against their myriad of HMRC winding up orders and keep on winning a few football matches and being there or thereabouts. You know, it just beats me out. It keeps on going on, but it does. Anyway, have we got any
supporters have called for a boycott today on Saturday?
And news of a they're setting up a Phoenix club, aren't they?
Yeah.
So they said it. I think the trust that's sort of behind that idea says that, look, it might have come to fruition depending on how Southend are, but we'd need to set the foundations or platform for it in case it does happen. Yeah. So it's not the thing that they want to do, but you know, they're going to explore the idea.
He'll be in the new stadium soon, so it'll all change.
How many years ago was it them that sold their ground? It was Colchester that sold their ground to Sainsbury's, wasn't it? Yeah. No, it was Southend.
Yeah.
Sold their ground to Sainsbury's at least 30 years ago.
Sainsbury's, now. At least 25 years they've been talking about it, I think. Anyway, have we got any little bits and bobs we want to bring in to bring this to an end? Everybody's looking a bit rabbit in the headlights. Oh, Daz is waving a pen.
Yeah.
You got a new pen?
Oh, no, it's an old one. I chew regularly. Couple of things. I think we've been playing a lot better than our points total suggests of late. And I think we're due to go on a run. So I'll give you a little thing to look out for. What's the longest winning streak we've ever had, Stu?
About 12 games, isn't it? Just let me have a little check.
It is in the 30s, wasn't it? I thought it was 10, looking. But it might be 12.
Well, I'm going for around 10, so I reckon by 5 o'clock on the 11th of March, we'll have 82 points.
That's it for
that. And I also want you to know that Notts County are now going to stop getting a penalty a game. along with Wrexham, and we're going to start getting a penalty a game.
We've only had three this year. We missed one of them.
Yeah, I'm not sure who's going to take it, but I think we are due to start getting.
Bring him on as a penalty taker. 10 games, 1933-4 season.
How many, Stu?
Yeah. 10.
Oh, well, 10. We'll equal that, and then we'll draw at Woking in the 11th game. How's that?
Right. That'll give everyone something to complain about, won't it? Not breaking a record.
Not breaking a record.
Well, the last time we lost three on the bounce, we went on a really terrific run, didn't we? So, we have got bounce back ability, as was coined by your man at
Ian Dowie. Saw him at the services last Saturday. He was at Torrington Services, southbound, yes. Coming out of the toilet. I don't know whether he had any bounce back ability about him then. I don't know, but he was just coming out of the toilet. I'm not too sure. I don't know what was wrong with
him. He might have bounced back from something in there, mightn't he, bless him?
Yeah. You said you had a couple of things, or was that it really?
I was giving you 10 wins on the trot, which I thought, you know, will brighten everyone's mood. The fact that we're going to start getting penalties when no one else is going to get penalties is another thing.
Well, to be fair, I think I've said this on the podcast before, some considerable time ago. But Brian Scrimgeour, when he was at Dundee, they were hoping to get promoted or whatever this particular season. They just lost to one of their rivals, and they got 10 games to go, and the manager startled everybody by sort of saying, right, you know, put your hand up if there's anybody in this dressing room that doesn't expect to win the last 10 games and go up. And, you know, after losing a key match, that wasn't what they expected, and they all kept still and didn't put that up, and they won 9 and drew 1 of the last 10 games and went up. I did fact check that at the time, and it might not have been 10, it might have been 9 or something like that, but it was right. And it did occur. So,
it's very easy, isn't it? After a couple of defeats, unjustified defeats really, and certainly flattering to the opposition on both occasions, just to forget where this club was in 2020. And even looking back to the team and the squad we had at the start of last season to the one we have today. And I know which one I'd rather have.
Yes. And, you know, if we do finish third, it'll be a third consecutive season of improvement. And it's not very often you get three consecutive seasons of improvement. They might only be small marginal improvements, but they're small marginal improvements. For 5 or 6 years, we'd not had any of that.
No.
We'd have rather going for large first. Falls down.
I'm still going for first. You've got? It is, yeah. Sorry, I'm going to put it down. Yeah, it's...
ball in your hand.
I got a bit... I just have it... Just have it next to my desk. That's all.
All right, okay. Not fair dues.
I'm still going for first, because if you aim for first, then it helps you feel a better mindset. Because if you say you might not finish third.
It'll
be a bigger disappointment, you know, if you don't. So if you aim as high as possible, win every game.
We know everybody in football only ever looks at the next game anyway. I'm sure Paul Cook doesn't even know we're playing Notts County on Saturday, even though that's the next game.
That goals clip was courtesy of BBC Radio Sheffield. I don't know if I'm going to mention that. I don't think I mentioned that before, but it is. I better mention that because of legal action.
Yeah. You're legally obliged to do so.
Phil's.
We've lost him.
He's still there. But he's gone a little bit frozen.
Smirk
on his face.
Yeah,
it's an improvement, isn't it?
There he is. He's back.
Hey, he's back with us.
Did that go dead for everybody there, or was that? Just
it did.
That no, well, you went dead for everybody. Yes.
I went.
But
dead
we
for
were all
dead.
Still here.
Right. So are we picking it back on that after your courtesy of Radio Sheffield, Paul?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was it. Yeah.
Right. So okay. We'll give you silence so you can see your waveform. Interview to add, Stu?
Sorry?
Anything for you to add?
Oh, no, not really. No, thank you. No.
Really? Fair enough. That's okay. I've got no problem with that. Well, I'd like to congratulate Chesterfield FC Women, who were on a bit of a run of their own. They're, nine unbeaten and moved to the top of the league. There's a couple of teams with games in hand below them, but hey, we'd all rather be at top than not at the top, wouldn't we? So well done to them. And really, I think now it's time for us all to strap in and watch the ride. 10 wins on the bounce. We heard it first from Daryl Carpenter, the East Stand Massive. So, yeah, get your 10p on that and pick up your winnings later. So, yeah, so from me, Phil Tooley, Stuart Bass and Daryl Carpenter, Paul Fisher, we have been The Sky Is Blue. And we'll be back with you the next time that Paul sends a link.
In the still of the night, a dawn's early light. In fact, all day through will be a spy right. This is that we recite, we love and despise the ups and the downs, cause we're a spy right. But now you can hold it, cause this podcast for you is called The Sky Is Blue. So come on in too, when everything's blue, and hear our review, cause you're a spy.
And if you like this podcast, then don't forget to subscribe. Please rate and review us on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, and many of your favorite podcast providers.